Hello and welcome to Goblet of Wine, a drunken Harry Potter podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Charlie, and we're 20-somethings rereading our favourite childhood book, this time with added alcohol and cynicism.
In today's episode, we are reading chapter 26 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince with some very special guests.
So grab a glass of your favourite alcoholic beveragino and listen along on this drunken, reminiscent journey.
But before that, we're going to do some other things.
Yes.
Psych!
Psych! Psych! Ha! Ha! Bet you thought you'd seen The Last of Us, bitch!
The intro, Hannah and Charlie, not the episode, Hannah and Charlie. We've got some patrons to do.
Yes.
Because we don't do those in front of guests, because they don't want to hear that.
They don't care about
they
you.
Don't care about all of you. And also, a tiny bit of explanation before the episode starts. This was a remote recording where there was a couple of technical difficulties. So the sound... it's just a bit patchy. You'll hear tiny echoes in places where basically I've had to overlay two audio tracks. One person's mic is significantly different to the rest of us. So, like, for most of your perspective, it's going to be fine. It's just us being fussy, but we are sorry for any, like, weird things that you kind of hear.
Yeah, you can fucking deal with it. It's one episode, bitches.
Yeah. So let's do some shout-outs to some new patrons.
Yeah.
A Miorca-sized thank you to MLCox37512.
A Ketterman-sized thank you to Cara... and Molly, who are new producer level patrons.
Indeed. A mole size thank you to Maddie, who has upgraded their pledge.
A good size thank you to Gabriella.
An Appalachian Mountain size thank you to Alice.
A Jean Short size thank you to Jenna.
A Helen and Bonner Carter size thank you to Helena, who has upgraded to a producer level patron.
A Florian Fortescue size thank you to Florian, who has upgraded to producer.
I really hope they're really called Florian.
Yeah,
I really
that's
hope
a so. Spectacular name.
Yeah. A Muppet size thank you to Meg, who was also upgraded to a producer level patron.
A Hedwig size thank you to Hedda.
And a Rebecca from the Taylor Swift song Last Great American Dynasty size thank you to Rebecca. Thank you all so much for joining the Patreon and for supporting us.
Well,
so now listen along to some of the most exciting guests we've ever had. This is a proper laugh episode. Like this is funny.
Oh, it was brilliant.
I know we're normally like the funniest people you've ever heard.
Obviously.
Not. But God, this episode's funny.
Yeah. It's also just a special one for us because the people that are the reason that we started.
Yeah. So yeah, hope you enjoy. And thank you so much for listening.
Bye. Bye. Welcome, listeners. What you just missed out on is we're all taking the piss out of Marcel for eating rice pudding.
Yeah, for breakfast.
Yeah.
At noon.
Whilst drinking.
At noon.
At noon. But no, but it's okay because she hasn't taken a sip of her drink yet.
True. Yeah. Just holding it.
Can we clarify? My understanding was we were drinking mimosas and I don't see any orange juice in that.
No.
It's how she likes it with her rice pudding.
It's a raspberry lemonade mimosa.
We've gone off the rails.
Ooh, hello and welcome. What's this podcast called?
Goblet of Wine.
All right, take the reins back. We're very bad.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay, hi everyone. Today we have a very exciting episode because we are joined by Hannah and Marcel from Witch Please.
Hello.
Hi.
So nice to be here.
It's so nice to have you.
It's such Marcel. A surreal moment because Witch Please is literally why we started. Like, literally.
Incredible. Incredible. I love every time I find out that, like, some, like, chaotic podcast was inspired by our chaotic podcast, like sowing these seeds of like you too can get drunk on a bottle of wine and sit down and start recording it.
It's
nobody
amazing.
Can stop you.
Nobody can legally stop us.
But
we used to work together and this literally came about because we would like listen to you guys and then we'd be on like the work Skype, like the intercompany Skype, like talking about your episodes and stuff like that. And then one day we were like, we should do this. And then
but British. Good. And that's the only difference between us and all the American Harry Potter podcasts. We will be the first British one.
It
first
worked.
Ever British Harry Potter podcast.
No, we were. That's not a joke.
Yeah. And we're still like, incredible. I think there's like one other one or something. Like, it's really weird.
Yeah.
So one of those things where it's like, it's a little too on the nose. So like Brits won't, They won't touch it because they're like, no.
Maybe.
I don't know. But
we've made it our USP and it's worked. And also now there's podcasts that start because of us. So really, which pleases like the grandparent?
And then there's, and then it keeps going and it keeps going and it will keep going forever.
Good.
So, thank you so much for coming on and joining us, especially because, your guys' podcast coming back was one of the most exciting moments ever for us. So
incredible.
So could you kick us off by telling everyone a little bit about who you are, kind of a top line about who Witch Please are and how you came to love Harry Potter and want to talk about Harry Potter online?
Okay, so here's the origin of the podcast.
The origin story,
Marcel
yes.
Marcel and I met in grad school, and we were chatting one day about how when you are doing a graduate degree in English, it is really hard to still find time for pleasure reading, for particularly for rereading. And I was saying that, like, there are series that I really want to reread, but I really struggle to justify taking the time to read something I've already read. And I was like, for example, I've never reread the Harry Potter books. Like, I read them each as they came out, but I've never sat down and reread the whole series. As it turns out, I had also never read the last book.
What?
We didn't know. We didn't realize until we got to it. And I was like, this is literally new to me. I just
had
saw
you watched
the
film? And... Okay, I was going to say, you just had no idea how it ended.
Yeah, I just watched the movies. So we were like, fuck it, let's make a podcast. Let's reread Harry Potter together. Marcel had reread it many more times than me. Like, it was a regular reread for her, and it was the first time reread for me. And so we had a little bit of that, like, one person knows the series really well, and one person's kind of like
wait, what the fuck is happening?
A little bit of that dynamic.
It's literally the only time in our relationship when I know more than Hannah about something.
I'm a literal know-it-all. I know. I'm like an omniscient narrator.
Everything.
Yeah,
this is clearly just a Hannah trait as well, then.
Are you also omniscient?
Other Hannah.
I do come across the know-it-all. I do like to be a bit of a know-it-all, yeah. It's all good.
Other Hannah, are you also a Gemini?
No. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I am an Aquarius. Aquarius.
Oh, I love it.
Is it bad?
Wild. No.
Like, half my friends are Aquarius.
Nice. Okay.
One sign is bad.
What sign?
Is it my daughter's sign, Hannah? Is it Gemini?
No.
What sign?
I'm not telling.
What?
Stop
you
trying
can't
to get me in trouble on this podcast.
One side is bad. No, and then not
everybody
tell
stop
us.
Trying to get me cancelled.
You've got to. We won't continue until you tell us.
Yep. That will be the end.
Listen, a major part of my job is waiting out stubborn 19-year-olds who don't want to ask answer the question that I've just asked. So I will win.
It's Pisces.
Yeah, it's absolutely Pisces.
Okay.
I'm
Capricorn, so I was just really hoping you were going to say Capricorn.
And we like start a fight.
So we started a podcast at the end. And you know what? The tricky thing is now when people are like, you know, what? Like, when did you, you know, you must love Harry Potter. I'm not sure if that's how I would describe my relationship to this series anymore.
I used to love this series. And I loved it. And I probably would have gone on loving it forever if the author hadn't been such a turf.
Yeah, it's really tainted it for me.
Same.
It's like something really hard to reckon with, like both as a fan and a content creator. Yeah. It's and like all the time people are like, oh, you run a podcast, like what's it about? And I'm like,
you're like Harry Potter. And fun fact, I love trans people.
So one of the other questions that we ask is, what house are you guys?
Yes,
Ravenclaw.
We're definitely Ravenclaws.
Nice.
Undeniable Ravenclaws. We're just like, well, I solve a problem when you can think about it.
Well, that was an easy one. The next question we normally ask is, why have you chosen this chapter? Which I'm now convinced it's called based on your emails. Like, I want to do the tiny boat.
The tiny boat chapter. So, Marcel, tell the story of the tiny boat, please.
Like, tell the story of why we call it the tiny boat, or tell the story. Yeah, okay. So when we recorded our podcast episode about this movie, and Neil had joined us, and we were exhausted and we were drunk, and I don't, at this point, like, the actual origin story of the tiny boat is probably more apocryphal than, like, I just feel like we were.
She just started doing a really, so Marcel has a really good impression of Dumbledore from the movies.
Because he makes me so mad.
Yeah.
Because Michael Gambon didn't read the books, and so his idea of Dumbledore is, like, fundamentally at odds with the Dumbledore.
With the character.
Yeah.
It's so funny to blame him rather than, say, the director and screenwriters.
I mean, I blame them too, but he said in interviews he refused to read the books because he thought that what the directors and scriptwriters wanted should be more important. So I'm going to place blame on him too.
That just sounds like more reason to blame the director. Like, the director is directing this performance. Anyway, the point is that the performance is unhinged.
Yeah.
And, like, don't get me wrong, I love a filmic adaptation that does its own thing. I think adaptation is a wonderful way to reimagine a character. Mm. But I require in-world consistency.
Very bourgeois of you.
A fancy bitch, okay? And I require in-world consistency if I'm going to suspend my disbelief. And the thing that I cannot suspend my disbelief for is that Dumbledore would have been researching Tom Marvolo Riddle, Lord Voldemort, and the making of Horcruxes for, like, 16 or more years, and be like, well, I don't know, it could be anything.
Could be a tin can! Like, actually, the whole point is it couldn't be a tin can. That's actually kind of the whole point. So Marcel starts doing this Dumbledore impression where, like, Dumbledore's just like, well, I don't even know! And then to the scene where we're talking about the cave, and Marcel's like, there's this tiny boat!
We'll get in this tiny boat.
And Harry's like, I don't know, sir, will I fit? And Dumbledore's like, I'll check the tiny boat.
So this is incredible because today when I was audiobooking the chapter, and this is going to be like the most Tory sentence to ever leave my mouth, but so, well, the first bit is a bit, right now
the,
I live
the
with
most,
my parents,
that's going to be a stretch.
I know, right? So right now I live with my parents, which is exactly what you want to do when you're 28, but
you're a tiny baby.
They have, like, I mean, calling it as a lake is an extreme. It's a very large pond, but it has, like, an island in the middle of it, and it's got a tiny boat.
Charlie's so actually today, an heiress.
No,
she's not. That's a joke. No. Sorry.
Is the
fact that you're trying to downplay the size of your parents' lake?
It's a lake, but it's okay, but because, like, realistically, you could throw something,
it's like,
from one end to the
other.
Like,
a pretty small lake.
Is it also in a cave? No, you have to go through a cave.
Sadly not. But there is, like, a little, like, boathouse thing that could be the cave. So, but yeah, today I was, like, texting Hannah, like, oh my god, we have to recreate the scene.
I was about to say.
Yeah, no, we're going to do it.
Is it the kind of lake one can get into?
Yeah.
If you don't mind, you're drunk enough.
No, I want to play when we reenact the scene. I want to play the corpses.
It is what we're trying to get people
to
do.
I want to be reaching out of the water trying to grab you.
What?
It's full of eels, but they're harmless.
What?
They're just little eels. It's all good. She didn't tell
and
me
fish.
This when I first got into this
I
lake.
I didn't know.
Well, and that's a you problem.
Also, when we first got in, we were so drunk.
Was attacked by a swarm of eels.
The shrieking eels.
The shrieking eels.
Oh my god, great reference.
That's fine. I just was about to say, like, if you're not allowed to get drunk and get into a body of water that you can't stand up in. This is where Hannah puts on her, actually, I'm the adult here. And
I won't tell you about the amount of times I've done that then. That's fine.
We'll I just need you to know I'm that it's really all fun and games until somebody drowns.
I'm a really good swimmer. I was once a swimming teacher, so, like, I'm fine.
But I'm not fine. I am not a good swimmer.
No.
I am a mediocre swimmer at best. And one time on a work retreat, we were all at this cabin on a lake and we were all very drunk and we thought it would be really fun to go skinny dipping. But because I am convinced that the worst possible scenario will always happen, I was like, well, if I'm drunk and I go skinny dipping, I'm going to drown. And then you're they'll find my naked dead body.
Here. And then everybody's going to look at your butt. Yeah.
So instead, I'm going to wear a life jacket. And
good, I totally knew
and I was like, this is incredible. Because if I were just wearing my bathing suit, I would have less on.
I totally knew there's a life jacket on. Literally the funniest image.
I would rather be found butt naked than butt naked with a life jacket on.
Exactly. That's not gonna.
The life jacket was to keep me alive, you guys.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point.
I mean, I get that, but.
One time, Marcel and her lovely, unbelievably weird partner, Trevor, came and visited another friend and I who were spending a month at a cabin working on our dissertations. And the lake that this cabin was on was quite deep and kind of like right off the dock. It was quite deep. And Trevor kept insisting that he had to bring some sort of flotation device into the lake with him whenever he went in. And he just kept saying in this very serious voice, he just kept saying, I'm just not a confident swimmer. Fucking image of this adult man with like a little fucking pool noodle. Just being like, I'm just not a confident swimmer.
Oh my God.
The last question we ask people, which I feel is needed, as we've all got very giggly anyway, is what are we drinking and why?
Well, we requested mimosas because it is before noon for me. So we're so sorry.
Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. Hannah was very insistent that she could not get drunk in the morning, and I was like, I'll get drunk on mimosas. And she was like, oh,
mimosas don't it's care. All fine.
Perfect. Yeah, it's literally a breakfast drink.
There's no morning drinking, but then Marcel reminded me of this breakfast drink, and I was like, yeah. It was this or Caesar's, but
Marcel and I are both vegetarians,
so no. That doesn't work.
Don't talk to us about no.
It is the only drink that we have refused, not to finish, but we've had one sip and actually been like, we are not drinking
out
that.
Of 100 drinks.
Over 100 drinks. That is the first time we've ever put our foot down.
We have tried alcohol from most countries on this planet and we will not drink that.
The Canadian Caesar is unacceptable.
It's honestly
the worst thing that's ever entered my mouth. I'm sorry.
It's the national drink of our terrible country. So it's kind of like, you know how people kind of think that Canada's like nice and good. Mm-hmm. Canada's actually like the national equivalent of that drink.
Evil and twisted.
Yeah.
I'm gross. Suddenly regretting gross the fact I'm weird. Going to a wedding in Canada next year. Maybe I'll cancel.
Yeah, don't. Yeah.
I'm gonna tell you guys a joke that is gonna be like just so lost on everybody except Marcel.
Yes.
Yeah. But a beloved Canadian singer-songwriter Gordon Lightfoot died this week. And he is known for many excellent songs, but my personal favorite is a very long sea shanty called The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which is like 10 minutes long. And it is about a real historical wreck that happened on Lake Superior, which is the largest of the Great Lakes. And so a friend of mine was saying that like she and her colleagues were chatting about The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald and about Lake Superior in the context of Gordon Lightfoot's passing, and that her colleague referred to Lake Superior as the gloat.
The greatest
Lake of all time.
Full time. Gloat.
That's quite good.
Which that's I really, really funny. Like.
That's funny.
Yeah. Anyway.
I like that.
It's a big lake.
Let's go
like
from big lakes. Hold on. Let's go from big lakes to small. No, did you just do the bit?
That's so good.
Yeah, but I think Hannah did it first.
Oh. Because you're both called Hannah. You're the same
I didn't. I was still talking about Lake Huron.
Do your great segue. Oh, no. I've hyped it up now. Should we go from big lakes to small lakes and tiny boats? Oh, my God. Look at that. I'm such a podcaster.
And from the wreck of big boats to the near wreck of a tiny boat.
Wow.
That's a segue of all segues.
That was the most professional this podcast has ever been and will ever be. Let's go.
Amazing. So what the hell happens in this chapter?
Dumbledore and Harry land on a cliff above the sea. They've kind of landed on like an outcropping of rock that's fallen down from a cliff. And Dumbledore explains that Riddle would have climbed down the sheer cliff face with two other children using just magic to stop them from falling, which is obviously very advanced magic for someone who doesn't know the type of magic they teach at Hogwarts, which is using wands and specific spells to kind of harness your magic, which shows how powerful
he's basically
he was.
Gollum.
Yeah, I was imagining it kind of like a.
I don't know how much magic Gollum has.
I was imagining it kind of like the magic of a mountain goat, because I don't know how they work, to be honest. Like, how are they sticking to a cliff?
Yeah,
that, or he's got the energy of one of those like rock climbing bros, you know, that they all work in tech and do like rock climbing and stuff. That's just young Voldemort.
That was 10 year old Voldemort.
Mm-hmm. Gollum literally has the magic of the One Ring, so
it's not his magic, that's the ring's magic. But listen,
but he has it with him.
Picture a young Tom Riddle as like a weird tree frog.
Yeah.
How much magic does a tree frog have?
Yeah. Oh my god, sticky magic. Sticky finger. Sticky finger magic.
Oh my god. What if young Voldemort was just really sticky?
Ew.
Do you guys know it's the bit in BoJack when Charlie Weatherspoon is like, "Oh my god, am I blowing you?"
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, exactly that. Oh, he's my God, just a really it. Sticky little boy. He didn't actually mean to steal the other children's stuff. He just touched it and it got stuck to him.
As are the two other children.
Voldemort's.
And he didn't want to bring them down that cliff. It just stuck to him.
And then that's the thing that was so scary to them that they couldn't articulate. They're like, we don't know how it happened. We don't know. We don't know what
we were stuck.
Voldemort's origin story of why he's so evil is just because he was such a sticky child.
Too sticky.
Dumbledore then proceeds to jump into the sea without checking if Harry knows how to swim, which I find very funny because Harry was an abused child who clearly, in book four, they kind of go like, you know, he had like one swimming lesson and knows how to swim. I'm not sure this kid knows how to swim well enough in the sea. No. And Dumbledore's just like, you good? Yeah, we're going in.
Yeah.
Like, you survived that second task.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be fine. Yeah.
I mean, he saw him not drown one other time.
Yeah, yeah, when he had webbed feet and hands and gills, but this is the same.
I just can't picture Voldemort swimming, because obviously he's been here since, and like, if he ever has to go check on her up on it, he's got to swim, and I just can't picture that man, you know, doing the breaststroke. Like, what?
I totally imagine him arriving and parting the seas like fucking Moses, you know? Just, I'm so sorry, I forget. Am I allowed to swear? I guess we're
just... Yeah, many swears, yeah. Go.
Yeah. So just...
No, he swims like a little frog.
Pew. Tom Riddle, little frog. Yeah. Voldemort, fucking Moses.
Especially considering, I think Harry mentions he's got his
the
wand
two genders.
In his...
Sorry, yeah. Harry's got his wand?
Harry's got his wand in his mouth. So is Voldemort swimming along with a wand in his mouth like a dog with a stick in the sea?
Because he can't tuck it behind his ear because he doesn't have ears anymore.
I mean, ears.
He's like an eel, you know? Like the eels in Charlie's parents' lake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. I also want to know, did Dumbledore check the tide times and the weather before choosing the night for this mission? Because Harry says the fissure would have filled up with water if it had been high tide. And also Harry specifically says it's not very windy and this would have been very difficult in high winds and waves. And I'm just thinking about sea safety and I want to know what Dumbledore checked.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? You're really convincing me that you are a good swimmer.
Thank you. You've got to think of your sea safety.
Yeah.
She is a nightmare to go on holiday with because she is that person that will see like a piece of land way out on the horizon and be like, I can swim there. And I'm like, well, please don't because I can't.
Go right ahead. I'll be here having fun.
I'll be on the beach with my cocktail. You swim those 2 miles.
Yeah.
I've never actually done it. I just want to say that I can. It's just one of my annoying habits.
You say it too much. One day you're going to do it. One day you're going to get a few drinks in you and you're going to swim somewhere that you shouldn't.
I would actively bully you into doing it. So, yeah? Yeah? You
can
do it.
This is how I've tried to get rid of Hannah.
Show me right now.
Do it. Do it.
Do it. Do it, you coward.
And do you know what I would? Well, so let's not go on a holiday together.
I'm pretty sure that's probably how you ended up in my parents' lake, to be fair.
Do it, you coward.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it was that.
That's also kind of the energy Dumbledore uses to get Harry into this cave.
Yeah, yeah. He's just like, I'm going, do it, you coward. Yep.
I actually had a note that I had for like a little bit later on, but I like to think that Dumbledore actually went in advanced and like scouted the entire situation out. This is how Harry's like, he just seemed to know, you know, he just kind of looked around and was like, yes, this is how we go through. But maybe that's also how he knew that like the weather and the tide would be fine, because he's literally gone ahead and done it all just so that he can look really impressive to Harry.
Never told Harry.
Yeah,
I would he's not like, put like, that past
when
him.
When you're as old as me, you get really good at magic and you can just feel it.
I just know that the little boat is here. He actually bought the little boat earlier.
I would 100% believe
that's
this,
his
yes.
boat. He brought it from home.
Yeah.
He was like, there's no way of crossing this lake, but I have to submerge the boat to make it look cool and impressive because I can't just like have a boat waiting.
Yeah. He put those in fury in there too. It's all just.
For sure, Harry, when he's like, what if we just tried summoning it? And Dumbledore's like, yeah, okay. Okay, go. Yeah. Try it.
I want to see what happens.
Yeah, summon the Horcrux, Harry. Do it.
Dumbledore, once they're in there, is like looking at the walls and he's like, yes, this is the right place because it has known magic. And this kicks off a theme in this chapter, which made my blood boil, of Dumbledore just not explaining how he knows anything, even though he is meant to be preparing Harry to hunt Horcruxes himself. Everything, he's just like, I just knew there was... there was magic here.
It's
I'm so old and wise.
Yeah.
He's already
explained.
Like, I'm gonna do a ton of like really intense, powerfully magical stuff that you are neither capable of doing, nor will I even explain it to you. And then I'm gonna tell you this is me having explained how to hunt Horcruxes, and then I'm gonna die on purpose.
On purpose.
So unsurprising that Harry spends the majority of the following book just kind of camping.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because what the fuck is he supposed to do? Just like sense magic in a cave?
Dumbledore knows at this stage, even if he isn't going to die tonight, he'll be dead in the next 3 months. This might be the only time they're going Horcrux hunting together. And he's like, yeah, this place is... How? What are you feeling? Tell Harry how you know that.
Here's a totally hidden cave that I found out about through information you have no access to in any way and never could. The hidden cave is impossible to find and has 17 barriers and requires the most powerful wizard in the world to retrieve the Horcrux. Also, it didn't work. Anyway, psych.
Anyway,
enjoy.
Now.
This chapter, well, this moment also kicks off another really annoying theme, particularly in this chapter, of just using the word penetrate constantly. Specifically right now, the line, we need to penetrate the inner place. You could have phrased that any other way.
We need to penetrate the inner place?
The inner place.
She's the fact Listen. Checking. Oh, loving the British copy.
It's the Canadian
copy. Oh, yeah, we don't have American copies in this country. Although, you know what? I say that, but then look at the one that I pulled off the shelf.
That's an alternative British copy as well.
Oh, is it? Oh, good.
Because it says, that's not really showing up. It's Bloomsbury, but it's also Raincoast. It's not. There we go.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a nerd.
The Canadian distributor.
And I'm a bit of a nerd for different editions and country copies of the books.
We need to penetrate the inner place.
It's horrific. Don't say
That's what she said. Am I right, ladies?
It says, this is merely the antechamber, the entrance hall. We need to penetrate the inner place. Like,
Dumbledore is saying is that he wants a deep dive. You know, that's what he's saying.
I mean, they've already gotten very wet, so... Sorry, he is penetrating the inner place with his blackened fingertips. So I'm actually just gonna see myself out.
Speaking of wet, this entire time Harry has been soaking wet and freezing, and Dumbledore just has not noticed.
I blame Harry in this situation because this is a simple spell that Hermione has been using since the fourth book, and Dumbledore should be really worried about the fact that Harry did not have to automatically use it on himself and questioning if this stupid child is ready for this Horcrux hunt, that he can't use a drying spell.
Okay, but the thing is, Harry is so dumb that Dumbledore really should have been like, I do need to dry off this ridiculously stupid child. And the fact that he doesn't and almost froze him to death makes this the second time in the series We have a punishment whenever we mix up Voldemort and Dumbledore, because we do it like at least once an episode that we have to do a shot. That's going to have to be added into my next episode, Hannah. I don't have shottable liquid here. Anyway, this makes the second time that Dumbledore has almost frozen Harry to death in the series. The first one being when he left him on a fucking doorstep in like November in London. Well, sorry. He would have died. He would have frozen.
Dead baby. We've tested We check the
temperature. I'm sorry, you tested it?
Let me rephrase.
A baby for nine months.
No. Every November 1st, we check the temperature in the middle of the night to see what temperature it reaches, and it is always a temperature that would kill a baby.
How? Sorry.
To confirm, I have never tested it with a real-life baby.
How do you know what temperature would kill a baby?
Well, Google how long can you leave a baby outside?
It's really questionable.
Okay, I need you to know that having Googled what temperature will kill a baby, you are on a list.
But we've also then reenacted it.
Jesus.
To our... truly inspirational.
I don't think you mean that as in a complimentary way, do you? I think you mean that in the way like inspirational of don't be like them.
No.
So
anyway, then there's a boat.
First there's blood. Turns out you need some blood to
When you penetrate that deep.
When you penetrate that deep, you will find blood. Exactly.
Yeah.
This is really stupid because Dumbledore's like, well, Voldemort will have wanted to weaken the person. The only person getting in here has magic, and Dumbledore himself cuts himself open and immediately heals it. Again, healing spells seem like relatively you should know them by the time you're 17, so how is it weakening the person? I know you're losing a bit of blood, but you're closing it up straight away.
I guess maybe it's symbolic, but then what I really love is that Dumbledore really has an attitude of like, ugh. Really? Like, that's so passé. Like, blood? Third like, you'd name. Be more of a cliché?
Dumbledore's magic is highbrow. Mm-hmm. Voldemort's magic is lowbrow.
It's very lowbrow.
I mean, you've said that you like to, you know, research the reality of these things. So have you ever, like, bled a bunch and then tried drinking a pain potion?
Not yet.
Maybe Dumbledore had a harder time withstanding that potion because he'd lost a very small amount of blood.
Like, have you ever like cut yourself and then taken an Advil? Turns out It's not that effective.
Think about it's like if you donate blood, you shouldn't go drinking after.
No, you should have a juice and a cookie.
Yeah. So it's like that. It's like
I would argue that you should go drinking after because you're going to get drunk faster. And
I take it back. I take back. You're a wreck.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, so he bleeds on the wall, and then Harry thinks something truly devastating.
Yeah, and to be fair, whilst it might be really cliche that Voldemort's like, yes, it must be blood, there are worse bodily fluids he could have asked for.
Did you have to go into bodily fluids? Did you have to?
I do. I have to bring up bodily fluids once per episode.
I really dislike that.
Imagine if he required semen. Like,
I mean, I knew that's where your mind was going to go.
Very sexist if he could only require semen, right?
Yeah. But he is Voldemort. I feel like if we're going to criticize him for something, probably sexism is relatively low down on the list.
Yeah, he seems to not be particularly concerned.
Blood is so easy to get out of your body. It should have been... Huh?
Spitting is easy.
Blood. So easy. So easy to get out of your
body.
Oh,
so it should have been something that's like... harder to get out.
Yeah, like exactly.
Tears?
you have to cry on the wall.
You have to have a good cry.
Sweat? Maybe a drop...
Female ejaculate?
Maybe a drop of each bodily fluid. Like, you've got to get them all.
Yes. Got to catch them all.
Gotta catch them all, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, no, I gotta tell you that
please
when I briefly, for almost 2 years, worked for an AIDS service organization, there was
Is this a segue from Gotta Catch Them All?
It wasn't, but it is now. We would run these workshops about HIV transmission and, you know, which bodily fluids transmit HIV and which ones don't. And we had a staff member who, I don't know if this was like a recent scientific discovery that he had sort of like grabbed onto and really wanted it to be his legacy or what, but he was insistent that anal secretions are also one of the fluids. And I just remember my colleagues being like, there are already so many fluids at play if you are engaging in anal sex. Anal secretions are probably not a real concern, but he just kept insisting, like, no, there are five. You think there are four, but there are five because there's anal secretions. And so this is what that reminds me of.
I'm gonna need you to go ahead and tell me what an anal secretion is.
Well, so according to my colleague, an mm-hmm. anal secretion is what allows you to poop without being in terrible pain.
Oh, is your butt self-lubing?
I know this because of people that have stoma bags. They obviously can't poo, but they still have anal secretion, which is apparently an extremely weird feeling.
In really bad timing, my cat is attacking my ass.
It hurt anal secretion.
Classic. That is a classic Todd move.
That is a classic Todd Moody, is the thing. Oh, yes, yeah, so I think we've solved it. To get in, you should have to, you know,
anal secretion.
Anal secretion. All over the wall.
Wow, yeah. This took a turn.
I'm glad that we have the episode title so early in.
Yeah, we're good.
I'm sorry. Are we early in? How long are we recording for?
We are not far through the notes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I blame you for telling stories about anal secretion. But
actually a very good point, because you know what? If anybody is going to be responsible for dragging this on to 6 hours, it's going to be these two jokers.
Dumbledore says, your blood is worth more than mine. And like, I get that he's probably just saying that he doesn't want to injure Harry. Harry is a child. He should be in charge. Things like that. But it did make me wonder if anything is to do with the fact that Harry's blood now resides in Voldemort. And there would be something about the cave recognizing Harry in some way. Mm. And it's setting off some sort of alert system.
I think he's literally, like, because we've seen Harry's blood being used for other, like, really powerful magical things. So I think it literally is, like, there's something going on in your blood that's not going on in mine.
Yeah.
Okay, but.
Also, he has less of it. And so it's literally.
Because he's smaller? Smaller?
You yeah. think a 16-year-old is smaller than a 207-year-old
he
man?
He is. Dumbledore's really tall, and Harry is a short ass.
Tall.
Canonically.
Yeah. Harry's short?
Harry's really canonically. Short. Canonically.
Canonically? Okay.
Canonically.
Anyway, Harry does, he...
Hey, listeners, write in and let us know which characters you think have the most blood in them.
When they're leaving, Harry does have a cut, and he's like, no, don't worry, sir, I cut myself. So, I mean, maybe because they're leaving, it's like, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, right. Because
not to be a Debbie Downer or anything.
No,
just
because
probably
we
some mystical fucking shit Dumbledore's saying to sound cool.
Yeah, your blood is so important. Just like, let me do it. I'm older. So they enter through the cave into the edge of a big dark lake with a greenish glow at the center. And Dumbledore's like, let's just start walking around because I don't know what we're doing.
And he definitely does. Not been here already.
I haven't been here. I haven't planted a boat in this lake.
Harry asks if they can try a summoning charm. And bless Dumbledore, he's like, go ahead.
Go ahead, sweetie.
That boat has carved on it the SS Dumbledore, and then it's, crudely, it's just crudely scratched out.
Yeah, it's got like a little like property of Albus Dumbledore tag on the inside.
And as we know, Harry has no observation skills and has never seen anything in his entire life, so he's never going to spot that.
Harry, much like the Michelle, cannot read.
But yeah, I love that Dumbledore uses this as like a teaching moment. He's like, yeah, you can summon it without teaching him anything else all day.
Exactly.
The one time that he teaches him something, it's just to let Harry look like an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go. Yeah. Give it a try, fucko.
Do it. I dare you.
Yeah. Me at you saying you can swim to a lake. Oh, you can swim to it?
Are you sure?
You're just going to swim there? Cool. Let's see.
Say it.
Let's see.
If you've said it, do it.
Let's go.
And then Dumbledore is really evasive about what's in the water. He's like, even though it said large and pale, and Dumbledore 100% knows it's dead bodies, Dumbledore's like, I don't know. It could be anything. I'm like, stop it. He's now going to see it for the first time when he's in the boat. Just tell him it's dead bodies.
Maybe prep him for that, you know.
No.
Or even if you don't know for sure, be like, Harry, statistically speaking, it's
probably dead bodies.
Okay. I'm going to do something really rare and defend Dumbledore here.
Okay. What?
And yeah, I know. I think we've had amply demonstrated to us throughout the previous books that Harry learns exclusively through experience. Harry has never learned anything from a book. He's never learned anything from somebody telling him. He learns by, like, bashing his human body against things until he understands them. Like, that is just how Harry learns. And so Dumbledore's like, I could tell you it's dead bodies, but you're just going to be like, what? It's what? Who? What is it? What's going on?
Why?
Like, you just won't understand until a zombie leaps out of the lake. And then you'll be like,
Dumbledore tells Harry it's dead bodies. Harry puts his hand on the water and is like, do,
I have further evidence that Dumbledore definitely put the boat there. Is like, can't Voldemort fly? Or is this just in like Dumbledore the film?
Yeah. You're right. Dumbledore put there because Voldemort can fly.
So could he not just fly over the lake?
That is a superb point. Could Voldemort fly when he put this Horcrux in there? How many years ago was it? 20, 25 years ago?
And I don't want to spoil the next book for your listeners, but we do learn in the next book that Creature and Regulus had to take that tiny boat. So, you know.
Oh, maybe it's property of Regulus.
I mean, yeah, that does spoil the joke, but
yeah, thanks, Marcel.
Maybe Regulus took his little boat with him, so then Dumbledore did have to bring his own.
It's a bring your own boat situation.
Yeah. BYOB. Yeah.
BYOB, bring your own boat.
That's what you have to do when you visit your parents' lake. I just want to point out again, I'm going to keep, because it's a video podcast, I just need you to see.
Excellent.
I drew.
Absolutely.
Please tell me that is the only annotation you have in that book.
Yep.
And that would rule.
Harry questions whether the boat is big enough to carry them both. And Dumbledore gives the most ridiculous answer. He basically says that Voldemort wouldn't have cared about the amount of people, but the amount of magical power. Okay, but boats still care. Like,
boats.
If it's a small enough boat.
Does physics work in the magical world? I don't think it does.
But like,
you don't know how boats work.
But I just feel like this was a really reasonable question from Harry for once. Like, if it was a tiny fucking boat, you'd be like, hey.
It is literally described as a tiny boat.
Because tiny he's boat. Like, Harry's like, I had to crouch down. I have never seen a boat small enough where it couldn't fit two grown men sitting with their knees up at least. Like, how small is this boat?
So, like, it's a really tiny boat, you guys.
It's such a wizard answer of Dumbledore to be like, oh, it's the amount of magical power. It's still a fucking boat. It's got to float. Like,
no. Stop talking about physics.
Does it? But does it need to float?
But also,
that lake is full of corpses. Yes. Does it need to float?
Sink.
Does it just need to gently slide? Yeah. Like, did you ever have to do one of those team building exercises where you have to, like, move something, but you're not allowed to stand up, so you all kind of lie down and roll and, like, roll something on
what?
You?
What?
I'd have never heard of this before.
What? You've never done this?
Oh, this is a British thing, clearly.
It's team building exercises. You have to roll on the floor.
In, so you, on like, your soccer with, and like, rugby teams, you do this.
Football.
Oh, sorry. Football. Oh, my God. I'm so embarrassed.
You should be. But also this whole, like, okay, so only an adult can fit in. This is, like, a specific bit. We know, like, the trace exists in the Wizarding World, that magic can be traced if you're under 16, but that it isn't specific. Like, if Ron, for example, does magic in the Burrow, it actually wouldn't make a difference because it is only the area, not to the wizard. So right. It just, like, made me question how, like, we're never going to find out, but the specificities of this spell work, that... Mm-hmm. Because Dumbledore almost explained it as the amount of magic. He's like, I've got so much magic. I am so powerful. It's not going to notice you. I'm like, well, if it's an amount of magic, then would you as a single person sink the boat? No, because Voldemort's very powerful and is presumably getting in his little boat. So, like, it must be an age thing. But why, if you're going to say no other wizards, would you not just make it no other magic? Because, like, we know the loophole is there so that Creech can do it, and we know it's part of Voldemort's whole character that he continuously underestimates children and other magical creatures. This is just me basically saying Voldemort's an idiot.
Yeah.
I'm starting to suspect that this book series doesn't hold up.
I know. Crazy, right?
Shock. Oh. Can't believe it.
These plot points are not well thought through.
I cannot believe that J.K. Rowling may be not a very intelligent person.
Mad.
Wild.
Does not understand science.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, neither do I, but, you know.
But it's fine.
You're not writing it.
Sorry. Did you just say neither do you? Because you were making some pretty bold claims about boats.
I don't understand science, she says, being like, if you put a person in a boat here, it'll go like this, and if you put a person in a boat here, it'll go like this.
Well, look, I spent a lot of time on Daddy's lake in a boat.
Get out.
Yeah, that everybody spent a lot of time on Daddy's lake, if you know what I mean.
Ew!
Ew! Ew, what?
No, I don't know what, I also do not know what I mean.
Yeah, but it's fine if you make the plot hole Voldemort's, like, main flaw. It's like, no, it's fine. It's not a plot hole because it was Voldemort's main flaw all along that he underestimates children and magical creatures.
Yeah.
So fine.
And he's afraid of corpses, but you don't need to be afraid of corpses. They definitely won't pull your alive human body to the bottom of this lake and drown you.
That is the most ridiculous side where he's like, don't be afraid of the dead body. The enchanted dead bodies. They're not dead bodies.
Don't be afraid of these
dead
bodies. They are going to, they are totally going to drown you.
Yeah. Dumbledore is way too chill about these dead bodies.
Dumbledore, yeah. Don't be afraid of the dark. Don't be afraid of dead bodies. Definitely don't be afraid of dead bodies in the dark, when you're enchanted and we'll pull you under water and drown you.
Have you seen how fucking great our boat is? We're fine.
I know it's really small. Tiny. I know it's small. It's a small boat. It's small.
Listen,
this boat is the Horcrux.
Yeah. I have been using this boat for 30 years. I mean, this is the first time I've seen it.
Professor, is that your name? Shut up, Harry. What's that over there?
Look, Harry, another dead body leaping from the water, but don't be afraid. No, it won't hurt you.
No,
it can
fine.
Just leap out the water.
I like to
fine.
Think that they are leaping, like fully like dolphins like leaping dolphin. Out of the water. Like
Maybe it's like the wizarding equivalent of you being like, the lake's lovely, you can get in it, it is full of eels. Because when you said that, I felt insane. But you were like, yeah, I mean, it's chock-a-block full of eels, but you can
eels.
Get in.
You do know
they're
that most gonna... lakes you've been on, you know the stories you were telling us earlier probably had eels in, don't you?
No.
Yeah, they did.
No, we're in a different country than you.
You have eels.
I think you have eels.
Not
no,
I don't,
eels.
I don't think our lakes have freshwater eels.
There are snakes.
Oh yeah, there's water snakes for
worse.
Sure.
That's
and
worse.
Snapping turtles
eels are cute.
And
worse,
like fucking some of the ugliest fish you've ever seen.
I'm good with my eels.
I'm gonna be researching eels for a while. So you guys just continue.
Cool. Okay. Cool. You're like, I when I said I was a know-it-all, I must now pause to Google things so I can win this argument.
Yeah. So
this is like big Gemini energy.
So Dumbledore then says a very, very important thing to Harry. He's like, Harry, are you listening? Harry, are you listening? Are you listening, Harry? Harry, are you listening? Fire is needed to stop Inferi. Do you get it?
Wow.
Fire. And Harry's like, I got it, sir. But also...
Don't worry, sir.
Don't worry, sir. Such a great callback to book one, where it was like, with the devil's snare, like, fire is needed. And all three are like, what? Who? What? Where? Can you light one? There's no wood. I don't know what's happening. Fire?
Jeez.
And then we enter.
Is there freshwater eels in Ontario? I was wrong, and I retroactively regret every choice I've made.
Do you know why?
Colonials?
Because of colonization. There were... no eels.
You
can't believe you brought your fucking eels here.
Sorry about
yes,
that.
Yes, we can.
This is the worst thing the Brits have ever done.
This is the by eels. Far the worst thing. The eels.
Did you guys know that there was an early British colonizer who wanted to bring every kind of bird ever mentioned by Shakespeare to Canada?
I absolutely believe it.
As a result, introduced like a ton of invasive species and absolutely devastated the ecosystem.
I just like to say sorry.
Yeah, but the whole environmental impact aside, imagine that being your life goal. Pick a different thing.
Why? I know we're pressed for time, but I gotta tell you that recently I was at this like big group dinner thing, and we have this friend, bless him, very nice, very, very English. I can't tell you. It's a secret. His name is Matt. I don't think you know him. And I made a joke. I made a joke about his people colonizing. And he was like, you know what? I can't even say anything, you know, because like there's just nothing left to say about it. And I was like, you could still say sorry. You can still say sorry.
Yeah, I hate to break it to you, but there is actually quite a bit left to say about it.
Mm-hmm. My bad. Oopsie.
I'm sorry about the eels, and I'm sorry about the birds. Mm-hmm.
So they get in this little boat.
And Dumbledore says, fire, fire. Yeah. And Harry's like, cool, got it. Woo, didn't listen.
And then we enter what I like to call...
A perfect demonstration of why Dumbledore wasn't like, it's dead bodies in the lake. Because he's like... Now that you've seen the dead bodies, fire. Fire is the fire. Thing to use. Mm-hmm. And Harry's like, mm-hmm. I'm not, what? I will not be remembering that, yeah. sir.
I will thank use you. Every other spell in my arsenal apart yeah. from fire. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then we yeah. enter Taskmaster Harry Potter edition. Do you guys have Taskmaster? Do
yeah, you- I know, yeah. but like...
You have it. Ours.
We yeah. can get your. We can get British TV.
But like,
I am obsessed with Taskmaster. It See, is one yeah. of my favorite shows of all time.
So you're telling us off for bringing you eels, but we're giving you Taskmaster. So I think that's a no, very fair trade.
You kept Taskmaster there and let me come visit it.
You can visit the eels.
I'm required to visit the eels because you put them in my lakes.
So, okay, so why is it like Taskmaster?
For any listeners that are unfamiliar with Taskmaster, it's basically like a TV kind of game show thing with comedians where the Taskmaster sets them a task, and kind of the design of the program is that really, you have to try and think of a way of doing the task that, like, breaks the rules without breaking the rules. So some people do just straight up follow the rules, but everyone tries to find, like, the most chaotic way of, like, possibly doing something and kind of bending the rules. And then the Taskmaster makes a judgment on whether you actually did it or not. So that's exactly how I treated this. So we know that the rules are there is a basin on like a pedestal full of liquid with a locket in it, and the potion cannot be penetrated by hand. Once again, really didn't need to say penetrate. Vanished, parted, scooped yeah. up, siphoned away, transformed, charmed, or otherwise made to change its nature. Therefore, we are still perfectly able to tip out the basin, evaporate the water, penetrate it with an object, water it down, just break the basin, or my favourite, big magnet. I just think that Dumbledore is really hasty to say it's got to be drunk.
Yeah, the question that I've but always
when you,
had...
when you scoop it out, it refills.
But when you scoop it out with a goblet and tip it down your throat, it doesn't refill. But does it refill yeah. if you scoop it out with a goblet and tip it on the floor? Has always been my question, because like, how does it know? How does the potion know?
Is there question. Like a if the potion interacts with saliva, it will not refill, but what if you have a real dry mouth?
Yeah.
I remember in the original run of Witch Please, I was complaining to Marcel about the fact that when people use Polyjuice Potion, it reproduces aspects of their body that would not be encoded in their DNA. So like, for example, Moody is still missing his eye.
Very good point.
And I was like, that doesn't make any sense, because like, if you use like hair, it's obviously like you're getting some DNA for the person. So it should only reproduce information that is encoded in your DNA. And Marcel's response to me, which I will remember forever, was, it's fucking magic, dude. Like, it's not, they're not doing science.
All of these podcasts that exist of us unpacking this book and being like, you know, this doesn't work. And anyone could just turn around and be like, it's fucking magic.
Fucking magic, dude.
I just think if you're going to list things that can't be done, you're opening a can of worms and you then have to cover all the bases. You can't just list some and then leave Big Magnet unanswered.
Exactly.
Big yeah, magnet. That is.
And also, as
big
we know,
magnet gate.
As we know about wizards as well, they constantly underestimate like muggle inventions. Like we know Fred and George use like muggle lockpicks. We know that the famous "Did you get an older student to put your name in the goblet of fire?" as if that would have worked. We know that wizards underestimate muggle inventions. So I am absolutely convinced they could have just got a really big magnet,
especially Voldemort, because. Like his whole, I'm going to say it from the last episode, hubris. This became a joke because I can't say that word. Is that...
You know, what do you do with the U, you know?
I don't know.
Hubris?
Please don't start us on this track again. I cried last time.
You were saying it like humorous, weren't you? Like huber. Like I can't even do it.
Hubris. Yeah. Hubris is very funny.
Yeah.
Maybe the secret is like claw game.
Yes.
You know, like those arcade games where you got to manipulate the claw.
Because it does say that it can't be penetrated with a hand, but that doesn't rule
that's
out
not a hand.
Objects a or a penis or a foot. Like, there are any...
why did your brain go to penis? Why? Why did it go to penis? Why?
I just...
Just a second, Harry. I'm going to need you to turn around for a minute.
Tell me how it would help.
The fact that you guys are just like writing a porn parody. So then you have to jizz on the wall and then you got to stick your dick in the fountain.
This is the podcast. If you've already jizzed on the wall, it can be really hard to, you know, reboot.
Yeah. Excuse me. I didn't finish up anal secretion. That was you too.
I mean, the thing is, though, like...
You too! Excuse me!
They're able to escape because Harry then, like, gives blood or whatever. But if it was semen, you were just one person, you would need, like, 20 minutes, wouldn't you? You wouldn't be able to make a hasty escape. So, actually, it should have been semen on the wall.
Depends on your refractory period.
Also, age, you know? I think
hydration.
We can all agree that younger people can reboot faster.
Yeah.
So Dumbledore is at a real disadvantage here, being 269 or something.
Dumbledore would just be blowing dust.
Dumbledore is definitely blowing dust.
Oh my god, I hate it. I hate it so much.
But yeah, I absolutely agree with you that they did not try enough different ways to get this locket out the goblet before being like the basin before being like it
again,
has to be drunk.
Maybe it's because Dumbledore definitely came here in advance, but he just assumes it has to be drunk just immediately. Like, I kind of feel like he wanted to drink it.
Oh my god.
He's like, if I die, then Severus doesn't have to kill me. Everybody's like, good.
I'm so magical that it's really hard for me to get drunk. And so I actually just kind of want to get really fucked up on this potion. And I brought a 16-year-old to watch me.
Can you guys imagine, though, if after everything that happens, which I know you will get to in a moment once we stop hypothesizing, imagine they're just in the tiny boat on the way back to the wall, and Harry's like, oh, sir, I forgot. I have this magnet on a keychain. Do you think this would have worked? And the locket immediately is like, thunk.
Harry puts the locket in his pocket, and when he pulls it back out, it's stuck to the giant magnet that he already had in there.
Oh, sorry.
No. What would actually happen is Harry wouldn't realize it would get fully to the next day. Dumbledore would be dead. Harry would recap Hermione on what went down, and Hermione would go, but what about the big magnet I gave you just before you left?
Sirius's goddamn mirror, right? And Harry's like, what do you mean?
I don't have something that Sirius wants.
I never opened the package. Harry.
Harry then agrees to force feed Dumbledore the potion if it comes to it and is extremely reluctant. They have a half page conversation of do it, no. Okay, I'll do it. And it goes on and on and on.
And the valuable lesson that Harry is learning is... Daddy wants his num-nums.
I've decided I quit in this moment.
Yeah, I'm just going to hang up.
Bye. Yeah, you quit. You want to go swim to an island?
Yeah.
But
Daddy Dumbledore starts drinking.
But also, I just wanted to say, he'd never brought anyone before on these missions, and then this happens to be the only mission where he needs someone. Like, Dumbledore, what would you have done if you'd come alone? Like, what was your plan here?
Oh, no, but he did!
He already know. He came, he realized he needed somebody else, he went back and got Harry.
Got Harry!
Yeah.
He's like, oh, Harry, I think I found one.
He's actually taken a goblet full of the potion already, like, damn, that's bad. I need help.
So he starts drinking. He starts begging to stop. He's like, please don't make me. I can't do it. And as someone that's run a drunken podcast for like 4 or 5 years now, this is so relatable. The amount of times me and Hannah have had this exact conversation when drinking something gross, it's so relatable.
Don't make me do it. Don't make me do it.
This was us trying to make it.
We could have made you drink something gross for this podcast.
But then we would have had to drink it.
Yeah, exactly. you have to drink it too.
Great point. I don't want to do that.
We've had some horrific ones. Ironically, the worst was the Caesar, though.
Like the Caesar, yeah. Dumbledore sounds like a child when he's protesting. He's like, please don't make me. And it sounds obviously so alien and horrible to the reader because we have never heard Dumbledore talk like this. He is always in charge. He's always like the one leading a situation. And he starts
all of a sudden,
saying,
all of his L's are replaced with W's and he's saying,
I'm a will baby. Please. The one at Winter Potion.
Please, Harry, no.
This is exactly what he's doing. Please.
Yeah. My toddler right now has two phrases. One is uh-oh and the other one is oh no.
Oh, that's so cute.
And that's Dumbledore.
Oh, yeah. Marcel, no. I've been meaning to address the fact that you don't send me enough videos of your kids being cute.
I'm sorry, you're right. I don't.
So
I will.
I need video evidence of both of those phrases.
Oh no.
Yeah.
What he does really start saying is, "It's my fault. Don't hurt them." And this is like quite.
Don't hurt them.
God. Sorry, you're probably trying to say something serious.
No, I mean, but your point's funnier, so.
What do you think, guys? What kind of horrible trauma do you think that he's picturing? Because he's been through a lot of them.
I mean, I always thought it got revealed in book 7 that it was...
Nobody's read that book.
Nobody's read that book. It was the moment that Ariana's killed.
Ariana Grande?
Ariana Grande died?
Yeah. I almost made Marcel spit take, and I'm really proud of myself.
But yeah, it's quite a nice setup that this will be the reveal a whole year later for Harry. Because he's just in the moment dealing within it. For the last glass goblet, Harry has to tell Dumbledore, this will kill you. This will be the one that kills you, because Dumbledore is so upset. And for me, like, I hadn't thought of this before. And I know there's like a lot of moments throughout the books, again and again and again, where Harry loses a part of his innocence. He becomes an adult. But I think this is like a huge turning point, because I think in book 7, there's quite a big leap in Harry's actions, in how he plans things. Like, there is, I think when you read them back to back, he seems like a very different person. But I think this moment is one of the biggest turning points, almost more than the death, because how do you regain your innocence from forcing pain onto someone who is like your part mentor, part father figure? And how do you not feel, he knows he's going to feel guilty forever. That's the thing, he's going to be aware of that as he's doing it, therefore his innocence is being taken away from him.
Yeah.
But luckily it's Harry, he has a 5-second memory. He never thinks about this moment again.
What? Who? Where?
He fucking memory holes it like he does all of his other trauma. Spoiler alert for a series that probably none of you have watched, but that I did recently make Marcel watch 5 minutes of, which is Steven Universe, which is this adorable cartoon about this like little magical boy coming of age. And they did this final season where he's a teenager. It's like Steven Universe Futures, and it's like sort of what things look like after all of the climax is over, and it's mostly about healing from trauma. And there's this scene where he goes to a doctor's office and they x-ray him and they're like, all of your bones have been broken multiple times, because he was this child who was like thrust into all of these, like, what at the time were like, wow, magical situations, but like literally left him with this like enduring physical trauma, because like those things aren't supposed to happen to your body when you're a child. And I just keep thinking, I just re-listened to the original audio that Anne and James and I recorded when we went and saw The Cursed Child, which is just all about how fucking traumatized Harry is. And it's just like, he memory holes it, but don't worry, the body remembers. It's coming back. The body keeps the score.
It's gonna come back.
Yeah. But this is, I totally agree, this is such a pivotal scene, because it is the moment where Dumbledore hands off to Harry the, like, agency and self-determination that, like, he will, after this, it's on Harry to be the adult who runs things. And we see him really take that to heart. But, like, the moment for me that really does that is the final line of the chapter where I'm like, oh my gosh, shit, yeah. Like, this has been a power reversal, but I'm not going to spoil it.
So Dumbledore begins to need water, as we all do when we are extremely drunk, much like our last recording session, Charlie, where I cried afterwards and needed much water.
And specifically said you were crying because I was still there, which I will never let go.
I didn't mean it like that. I didn't mean... She was crying because she couldn't go home and see her cat.
So then I got upset.
It's, yeah.
She just hates me.
I was upset that she was... without away her cat Todd. Away from her cat
to the point where she started crying and all she would say is, I'm upset because you're still here. And I was there like, I'm so sorry, I physically can't leave, there are no trains. I had been there for 6 days, admittedly.
It was a lot.
Okay, all right, yeah.
It's like, makes sense now. Yeah. So Dumbledore needs water so badly, but the goblet won't fill with water, but it will for a second, which led me again to, like, the Taskmaster style question of, what if you pointed the wand directly down his throat?
Yeah.
If it lasts a second, he can at least get some of it and keep doing it.
Yeah.
If you can make water magically, just make it in his mouth.
Yeah. And we know that man is going to be great at deep throating, so...
You don't... No. You don't put the water deep in his throat. That's how you asphyxiate and die.
But, like, it depends how quickly it's evaporating. It might need to be really, like, in there for him to swallow it in time.
Sorry, I'm now just imagining Dumbledore drowned on water within his own throat.
Then Harry drowns Dumbledore by forcing him to deep throat his wand. Yes. Yes.
Cool.
That is
there
the
are so many episode titles here. I don't know what to do. So Harry's like, oh, I gotta get it from the lake because that won't go badly. He's like, this
the
is
lake
what...
that has decaying dead bodies in it.
Like, he's gonna get a disease from this, Harry.
Yeah.
Like, fuck 100%. The magical probably... implications.
If,
like,
he doesn't die from Snape or that cursed hand, he is 100% gonna get the fucking plague.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, like, it's probably a good thing that he dies.
Yeah. Corpse water.
It's probably a good thing that he dies a couple of hours later.
The plague teaches nothing.
And also, you guys, I don't think he gets the water to Dumbledore, does he?
He throws it in his face.
He throws it on his face. He literally just shocks the man back awake. It just goes in his eyes. So that's the thing. Dumbledore didn't even need the water to revive. So, like,
he could slap.
He just needed a slap. Can we
just do some magic about it, Harry? You're a wizard.
No, he's not.
You're a wizard, Harry.
You're a wizard, Harry. Can we also talk about, so, like, it's described as a lot of bodies, right? Like, a lot of bodies, men, women, children. And, like, a 1x1's described as wearing robes. So these are clearly at least some wizards. Are these all Voldemort's kills? Has he been sending his kills to the dead person lake? But before he made the lake, was he saving up his dead bodies to send? Mm-hmm. Like, basically, I'm asking, where have the bodies come from?
Where I like to think, get those corpses?
You know when it's like a James Bond or like the Austin Power films where there'll be like a trapdoor that leads down into like a swimming room with sharks? I like to think on top of the cliff, there is just a trapdoor, and Voldemort just keeps putting, like, really shiny objects on top so that, like, people come along like, ooh, pretty object, and then they stand there and then the trapdoor opens and then poof, like, down
that's
into the
lake. That's a real fucking Looney Tunes-esque mental image you created.
Yeah. The big thing about In Fury that I feel like was a real missed opportunity, but maybe this would be a totally different series. As soon as I found it, like, as soon as we get that information that Voldemort uses dead bodies, I was like, well, we're definitely, like, he's going to bring Harry's parents. He's going to bring Sirius. He's going to have all these people that it's going to be really scary.
It's just a lake.
But that's the thing. Regulus is in this lake. Now that would have been cool.
Yeah. I guess we couldn't find it out at this point because it would make it a bit fucking obvious who then...
Yeah. Who R.E.B. was. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy looks like serious. What?
Named Regulus?
Oh, damn, this guy's wearing a velvet smoking jacket.
Mad.
He's leaning in a doorway.
I'm constantly just leaning. How do you find a doorway in this lake?
That I'm picturing so Voldemort sexy.
Going to a graveyard, raising an army of zombies, and then being like, come, my children. I need you children.
Maybe he just stood at the mouth of the cave and went, Accio dead bodies, and just let all hell break loose.
All of the dead bodies come flying. Well, that's the thing. I'm like, these can't all be people that he's killed because he's killed them over time and he's not storing dead bodies. Like, what is happening?
Mm. Yeah, he is. He's storing them in that
in the lake.
Fine. Like, is Hepzibah Smith in there?
Who's among us has not had a lake where we store some secrets?
Eels.
Maybe that lake is a metaphor.
We're getting deep now.
Don't know what's happening. This is what happens when I have had two glasses of champagne at noon.
Yeah. Oh,
sorry about that.
That you've only had two.
Hope your work goes well later.
Harry starts fighting and is doing what I like to call button smash fighting, which is what I do whenever I play any game.
Yes.
Super Smash Bros, like Skyrim, don't care what it is. No strategy, just every single move at once.
Yeah, all of them. But none being fire, but including the very illegal unknown spell that Justin Draco Malfoy and that he felt really bad about. So he does that one for a bit as well.
Even though they're dead bodies, they have no pulse, Harry. What did you think was going to happen when you cut them up? He's like,
we've established he's not really like a thinker.
He's like a doer, but doesn't do the right thing.
I like to think at this point, Dumbledore is totally fine. The reason it takes him a few minutes to help is he's just like, they're like, fuck.
He's just like, why didn't I ask Hermione?
I really should have asked Hermione.
Just looking at him like, my school is bad.
Yeah. Mm.
What happens when you bring in a ministry hack to teach defense against the dark arts for
maybe
a year.
Maybe I shouldn't have used my hiring abilities to sort of do political machinations.
To just hide people I didn't want murdered, no matter their teaching abilities. I love the line, one more dead guardian of a fragment of Voldemort's shattered soul. Okay, good sentence. Well done. Very nice.
Very, very, very gothic.
Yeah, big words.
Which word's big?
Shattered.
Shattered.
Guardian?
Fragment?
Ooh. Voldemort.
I mean, it's big for Harry Potter. Dumbledore makes fire. It's described as crimson and gold, which are the Gryffindor colours. Cool.
I hate that.
Look, there it is.
There it is.
They get back on the tiny boat with the ring.
Look how fucking confused he looks in this picture.
What am I doing?
What's fire? Also, I'm sorry, in that picture, is the fire coming out of Harry's wand?
No, absolutely not. No, look at this. Okay. Look at this. Look at this. Look at this. He's got his wand out.
Oh, yeah.
But this one has like a glow.
And that one doesn't.
And this has fuck all.
Oh, yeah. I just saw the bottom and I thought it was like coming out of his wand and I was like, well.
Absolutely not. Look at that face. Is that the face of somebody who can make fire? No.
No. Never made fire in his life.
No.
Hermione does it every time for him.
Can you imagine Hermione just making those blue jars and just throwing, just lobbing them at the Inferi? Back in the lake!
Go away! So they get back in the tiny boat. The ring of flames is encircling them. It's scaring the Inferi away. Dumbledore is almost collapsing. I mean, he's really beginning to flag. And I like when the line...
Aged.
Yeah, I like when the line calls him, Harry in his own head calls him his headmaster, because it's a really good reminder of like their places and how much they've switched in this chapter.
Mm. Harry specifically thinks about the fact that it seems like Dumbledore's really struggling to keep up the fire, and yet doesn't be like, hey, maybe I should
make some too.
Yeah.
Could you help, Harry? Should you help?
Harry's like, damn, that looks
can
like
I
you're
point
struggling.
Out, Harry didn't even grab the locket. Dumbledore did that.
Yeah.
Didn't even
Harry, you had one goddamn job.
I forgot the locket.
Can you imagine?
They go back, the basin's refilled.
The one
Try
job.
That again.
The one job Fuck that it. They
Paul
had.
Dobby.
And then we get that final line, which is like an amazing callback, which you mentioned earlier, and like this moment where it all shifts. Dumbledore says, "I am not worried. I am with you."
You should be fucking worried, because Harry is dumb as shit. Like, he's how has this not worried you?
He's literally done nothing.
Like,
he's
I can literally maybe understand nothing. Before this point, like, being a bit apathetic, but surely after this shameful display, you should maybe be fucking worried.
A little worried.
Very worried.
You should be at least mildly concerned.
Man can't make fire. Man can't dry clothes. Man can't pick up locket.
Literally, no. How long have man been making fire, and yet Harry...
The one thing Harry's demonstrated that he can do is feed you a bunch of poison, so you should actually be pretty worried.
Feed you poison and wake up a bunch of dead bodies in a
way. Yeah.
Oh, Harry.
Oh, God. Oh. Meanwhile, he could have taken Hermione and she would have been there with her big magnet, like...
Yeah. Fate. Canonically, Hermione always has a bunch of magnets.
Yeah. I feel like she would be that person with, like, a hat. Well, no, because literally she is in the last book with the handbag with everything in it, but she would be that girl. Even if she wasn't a witch, she would be the girl that you'd be like, ah, do you have a nail file?
And she's like, yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah, she absolutely does.
Yeah, did you also need band-aids? Did you file to... I've got the special finger band-aids.
You know that in that bag she's got a pack of cigarettes, because she doesn't smoke, but just in case somebody else... Mm-hmm. Wants to bum a cigarette.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I got one.
Or, you know, she wants to put the metaphor between her lips or whatever that John Green quote is.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know a John Green quote.
I do remember this, but I don't remember it. Like, I remember it being a thing online.
It's like from The Fault in Our... There's this character that's like, he's like smoking, but he doesn't actually light it. And he's like, it's a metaphor. You put the thing that can kill you between your lips, but you don't give it the ability to kill you or something like that. And it's like, I'm not sure that's a metaphor.
That's not what a metaphor is.
That's not how a metaphor works.
No. Yeah. So it became a bit of a meme.
Gotcha. Yeah. I love a meme.
Yeah.
So we've reached the end of the chapter.
With one whole minute to spare.
What do we normally do at the end of the chapter? Well, could you please... Well, normally we talk about the chapter, but if we really only have 1 minute, I'd like you two to talk about your podcast and why our listeners should go listen to it immediately.
And where they can find you guys.
Okay, promote.
Well... Which, please, is depending on when this episode comes out, which is, you know, in a bit, we're shifting gears. We are saying goodbye to Harry Potter and becoming a production company. So we will be Which, Please Productions. And we have a new flagship podcast on the horizon about popular culture, and we will do the same kind of shenanigans where we like...
Hey, describe what we actually do in Which, Please, because it's nothing like what we did here.
Oh yeah, no, that's a good point. Okay, so we've got the object of study, which is sometimes Harry Potter, but will no longer be an object of study, and then we approach it with some kind of theoretical lens or...
We're both, this probably came through just sort of via the erudition of how we speak, but we are actually both professors. And so
I could tell by the anal secretion.
Yeah, exactly. And so in Which, Please, we use critical theory to read the Harry Potter series.
Sorry, the way you said that sounded like, in Which, Please, you use critical theory to read the series, unlike the Goblet of Wine girls who use alcohol to read the series.
Yeah, correct.
That's fair.
Yeah, correct.
Absolutely.
The original
fair.
Run, we were often drunk, but in the reboot, we are sober and do it during the day. So it's just a series. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So that's kind of our thing, is we're like, critical theory is really cool and gives you a new tool set to read texts. And so we've been doing that with Harry Potter, because less out of a sort of particular passion for the series these days and more out of a recognition that it's like a text a lot of people know really well.
Yep.
But we're wrapping up this current reread, and we're gonna pivot to other popular culture,
possibly other Harrys.
Our pilot episode of the new podcast does start with a discussion of a Harry. Which one do you think of this?
Styles.
No. But good guess.
Oh, I love Harry Styles.
Well, you can make the next episode about Harry Styles.
That'll be my whole
thing. Just have a Harry
series. Just a Harry podcast. You just discuss a different Harry every episode.
Every single episode. Yeah. But yeah, if you guys, we are only chaos and we pretend to make occasionally intelligent points without knowing what we're talking about. Please go listen to Witch Please for genuinely, extremely intelligent, educational, well-researched points with occasional inserts of weird sound effects. I'm going to say that because they're my favorite part.
Yeah. Marcel's doing this, but like, Marcel, you've got a whole PhD. University professor.
Whole PhD.
You.
Tiny boat.
Tiny boat. Big PhD. Little boat.
But you also blend that with being extremely funny, which is incredible. So
we are just like this. So that is.
That's true. This, but sober.
Yeah.
I did give one of my first year students the advice that their essay didn't need to be good. It just needed to be done. Oh, and that feels like, you know.
That sounds like you're my dream teacher.
Good is the enemy of done.
Advice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But thank you both so much for coming on. We all our listeners should definitely go over and listen to you guys, and thank you so much for joining us. And I like somehow you managed to lower the tone, which is actually really impressive.
Might be a first.
Well done.
You're welcome. We are, as our producer knows, ungovernable.
Absolute chaos.
Mm-hmm. All the time. Very badly behaved.
Yeah.
All of the links to you guys will be in the description for our listeners to listen to. And thank you so much for listening to this episode. And we'll see you in the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine. To find us on social media, search at Goblet of Wine Pod on Twitter or at Goblet of Wine Podcast on Instagram. We also have a website over at www.gobletofwine.co.uk where you can keep up with everything that we do. This podcast is produced by our wonderful Hufflepuff tier patrons.
Yolanda, Sir Bandersnatch, Samuel, Patrick, Nick, Michael, Kylie, Cara and Molly, Jasmine, Florian, and Ash.
If you'd like to support this podcast, check out our Goblet of Wine Patreon, where you can also gain access to bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, and our Discord. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye!